Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I hope we're having super happy fun time Friday. I don't know about you guys, but things have been very, very busy on my end this last little while, in a good way. Got not too many complaints. Been having a lot of good shows this last little while. Let's see. Rod is supposed to be joining us today, but not sure if he's going to be able to make it. I messaged him, so if he pops in, that's great. If he doesn't pop in, that is also great. Actually, I'm going to shoot him an email really quick, just in case he doesn't have the link anymore. Just give me 1 second here, guys. Okay, hold on here. I just got to send a link. Let him know that we're live. So if he can pop in, that would be wonderful. If not, that's cool too. Hold on here. Give me 1 more second. All right, Rod, reaching out to you. Let's see if you're there, my guy. Do live now. There we go. And sent. All righty. We're going to start off with a little bit of Am I the Asshole? I'm just scrolling through Reddit right now. There's a lot of crazy things happening in Reddit right now, not even going to lie. I, like, opened up Reddit, and the first freaking link is, like, a vent. I heard my boss getting murdered at work yesterday. Whoa. Come on, let's click to see. You know, I don't even know if I want to read this. This sounds pretty... Oh, okay. So this is in the Sirius Sherbert from In the Vents. This is wild. TLDR, I was working when I heard banging on the back door. I thought it was some coworkers messing around. Later to find out it was my boss being stabbed. You know what? No, we're not even gonna get into that today because I don't even look at that. For anybody that's listening, and if you really want to see that one, that is in the on Reddit.com. It's the r/vent, the vent channel on Reddit. So I'm just gonna go ahead and avoid that. We're just gonna go straight to Am I the Asshole? Hold on here. Am I the... We haven't done any of those in a while. We've been having some super duper awesome. Hold on. Did I get kicked out of this? I don't think I did. Wild if I did, though. Did I get kicked out of this? I think I got kicked out. No. Are you looking for... I just went over to the thread, to the Am I the Asshole channel that I've been going to, like, how many times? And it says I'm not even in here. Like, what's going on, you guys, that I get kicked out? Uh-oh. I think I got kicked out. Well, that's really frustrating. I don't know why. Oh, no. Wrong thread. Here I am panicking over absolutely nothing. Panicking over nothing. All right. Here we go. Let's find a good one. This one looks funny. Posted 7 hours ago. Am I the asshole for not serving my husband leftovers? I have been off the last 4 days, so I finally had a chance to do some spring cleaning. I deep cleaned the whole house. Yes, this did take all 4 days. Well, that's to be expected, depending on how big your house is and how often you clean. Of course, it's going to take 4 days. It takes, like, a whole day just to do one freaking room properly. Anyway, I did bathroom stand, oiled wood tables, open and clean windows, everything. My husband sees I am off, and I have to serve him every meal since I am home. What the 90% of the time, I don't mind. Yesterday, I was tired and was making steaks for dinner, so I didn't feel like making a breakfast omelet, too. He got upset, and I ended up making both breakfast and dinner. Since I didn't want to fight, but he says I made a face. After dinner last night, I packed up leftovers and made it clear I would not be making anything tomorrow. Everyone agreed since I work today. When he got off work this morning, I served him something quick to eat. I have a hotel booked for this weekend for us. I was trying on clothing and packing when he asked to heat up his leftovers. I said, I told you yesterday I wasn't making anything today. He responded with, you're going to make a problem over heating something up on my birthday month. I responded with, I am tired and explained yesterday. You keep making problems with me over food. He turned it around and said, no, you're making the problems over food. You just don't want to serve me anything anymore. Cancel the reservation. I'm not going anywhere. Thanks for ruining my birthday month. Now, I did heat up the leftovers, of course, which he refused to eat, and the reservation is too late to cancel, so now I'm out the money, too. Is this a joke? Like, genuinely, like, this has got to be a joke post. I've got to see if there's a response. There's no fucking way that somebody is that entitled and going to have that much of a hissy fit over microwaving a steak. You got to be kidding me. Comments responding, his birthday month? What the absolute fuck? Hun, it sounds like you have a job, and yet you are also in charge of all household chores and food preparation, and your husband can't heat up his own leftovers, or his arms broken, and then refusing to eat the food when you made it for him? He is straight up abusive. Yeah. This relationship is wildly unbalanced. You need to get in individual therapy and deprogram from this being anywhere near normal. It's not. Not the asshole. Yeah. No kidding. Like, I can't believe what I just read. Like, this is so, like, literally all these comments, I'm just scrolling, and they're all just like, how have you not left him yet? Birthday month? OP doesn't have every single meal, let alone heat up leftovers, and he cooked earlier, so OP doesn't have to lift a finger. OP, you need to go to the hotel over the weekend anyway. Take a break for yourself. You seem like you really need a true relaxing break. Yeah, no shit. I mean, when you even go so far as to, like, oil the tables and clean the windowsills, and dude is having a hissy fit over microwave steak, like, girl, bye. Uh-uh. Ain't no way. Ain't no way. Like, buddy isn't working on the oil rigs with two missing legs that you need to bow with his feet like that. Like, wah. Mm-mm. Last comment. Not the asshole, but your husband is. He wants you to cook, clean, organize everything, and all he has to do is show up. That sounds very controlling. Quoting the comment here, the reservation is too late to cancel, so now I'm out of money, too. No, you aren't. Tell him the reservation is made and you will be there. He can show up if he wants. Yeah, no kidding. Yep, I'm going to thumbs up that one. I'll tell you what. That would be me making preparations to move the fuck out and getting my head straight. That is so next level there with the entitlement that I don't even know what to say. That's just disgusting. Anyway, ooh, here's a big one. Am I the asshole for embarrassing my sister's friend and making her feel unwelcome? My sister, cousin, and a couple friends came over last night after work. My sister brought a friend of hers I'd only met a few times that I'd never had an issue with. At one point, I went to the bathroom, and the ladies were in the living room, calmly enjoying wine. When I came out, my sister's friend was in the kitchen arguing with my son. I asked her what she was doing. She said, my son went into the kitchen to get food, and she told him to wait until I come out of the bathroom to ask me for permission. I stared at her for a second and said, who the fuck are you? You don't live here. He does. Who are you to tell him he can't go into his own kitchen? She looked surprised and said she was trying to be helpful. I repeated my question of why she thought it was okay to tell someone they can't use their own kitchen when she's the guest in someone else's house. She dodged the question and then brought up that she's a teacher, which isn't even relevant, and sometimes kids try to get around the rules. I asked her, what has that got to do with anything? I then asked who even gave her permission to go into my kitchen. She said she followed my son in. I said, so you think my son needs permission to his own kitchen, but you can go wherever you like in my house without invitation? So you have more rights here than he does? She said she didn't feel welcome anymore and was leaving. She went back in the living room, grabbed her bag, and walked out. My sister asked what happened. I explained that she had a disagreement with my son. My cousin and some other ladies said they thought it was strange she followed him into the kitchen and had been wondering why she did that and thought her motive was weird as hell. My sister and a couple other ladies said her behavior was perfectly normal and I was unnecessarily hostile to her. What? My cousin said, but why would you want to confront a child you don't know instead of saying something to the aunt who's right, cousin is right? Everyone but my sister acknowledged that part was weird, and we all moved on. Later, my sister confronted me privately and said she was upset I chased off her friend. She said she really likes this woman and that I was way over the top in the way I spoke to her. I can be a little extra when it comes to defending my kids, so was I an asshole? No! What is up with these threads today? The entitlement! Not the asshole. This lady way overstepped, and you had corrected her in a way that most parents would when there was a child being attacked, and he was. You should sleep well knowing you did the right thing, and your son will sleep better knowing his parent had 100% had his back. Your sister can be upset that a confrontation happened between a friend and her sibling, but her friend was way out of line. Well, your friend sucks, lady. Like, I hate to say it, but your friend, like, okay, like, we all love that friend who is willing to, like, go out of the way and, like, advocate and things like that for when, you know, when into people in need, but that was, like, way out of line. Way out of line. Like, wow. Okay. Yeah, all these comments are like, yeah, my sister would have been the one telling her friend off if that would have happened to one of our kids. Yeah? Yeah? Straight up. Straight up. See if there's any more good comments here. Not the asshole. That friend is way out of line. She was in your house trying to boss around your son. If she was so concerned, she could have asked his aunt or, I don't know, knocked on the bathroom door and asked you. She had no right to parent your child. See, I don't really personally have a problem when community members parent each other's kids. It's like when you're looking out for each other's kids and you're looking out for each other, that's a good thing. But, like, this is a clear violation of, like, everything, like ethics, boundaries, like, holy crap, like, follow this kid. It's not like this kid was going into the kitchen and trying to stick a fork in the outlet and you tried to stop him. Or there was a fight between siblings or something in the kitchen and you went in and tried to figure it out, or he was sneaking a beer upstairs and you caught him when he's like 10 years old. It's like he went into the kitchen to get food out of his own kitchen, and you gotta go like parent him like that. Like, that was your house, then I would have, like, oh my goodness. Holy fudgicles. That's all I gotta say. Like, I'm just, my jaw is hitting the floor with these threads today. Like, I can't believe people are even posting these kinds of things today. But it's just like, this is just clear that the moral degradation of society is starting to, I mean, it's always happened, don't get me wrong. There's always been people like this, but it's starting to really show. Holy wow. Okay, third one. We'll go for a fourth after this, and then we'll be done with Reddit. Am I the asshole for having a celebration dinner after my brother's divorce? My brother just got his divorce finalized. No one in the family likes his wife. She is not a nice person, i.e., she'd ask for ideas on what to spend his money on. Was the type of person that celebrated her birthday for 2 weeks and expected everyone to do the same. There were many arguments over that when people in our family didn't show up for each other and every event she planned or wore the shirt she'd make for her birthday, interrupt when people were talking to talk about herself, go running out to our mother anytime she asked for something and my brother told her no. The tipping point was when our mother was going through chemo. She had issues with her feet swelling and would elevate them while resting on the couch. The one time we all came to visit my brother, brought his wife, and she took the pillow out from Mom's feet to use it in the chair she was in because she was tired. Oh, wow! Wow! Like, I'm really hoping that these are just isolated incidents, because, like, holy fuck. What's going on today, Reddit? Like, what's happening today? Like, why are these beans being spilt and just, like, wow. This is so next level. Okay, continuing on. Aside from expressing our concerns when they first started dating, we never said anything to him and tolerated her for his sake to not push him away and just gripe amongst ourselves. Well, that's kind of nice of them, but... Now the divorce and the day was finalized, I put my brother out for dinner and invited some of our friends that hadn't been able to see him because of his wife. While we were at the restaurant, I toasted his new chapter in life. Someone said, real classy, and it turned out to be ex-sister-in-law's friend, now works at the restaurant. We finished our dinner, left, went out for a while longer. I got home, and while watching a show with my wife, my phone was going off with notifications. All messages from my ex-sister-in-law chewing me out for celebrating their divorce. Since my wife wanted to know who was messaging me, I showed her the messages, and she's of the mind that while she understands why no one liked my ex-sister-in-law celebrating the divorce and toasting it was a prick move, she thought I'd been exaggerating when I said I was taking my brother out to celebrate. It's been a few days, and my wife is still shaking her head at me over it. Am I the asshole? Yeah, sure. But it's funny. Not the asshole. You could have been balloons and cake. You could have kept it low-key. It's not your fault your ex-sister-in-law friend grassed you up. You know, kidding. No kidding. Everybody's like, block her and move on. Everybody's like, you know, this is the way. That's my kind of pettiness. Put an announcement in the newspaper and hired a photographer. Could have done that, too. Just saying. That's full petty. I like it. Top comments, let's go. You gotta scroll forever through these things. Not the asshole. You should have gotten t-shirts made and celebrated for 2 weeks. Do this, then go back to the same restaurant, maybe even for 2 weeks. Aw, that's like next level petty. And like, you could even find out this friend's schedule and show up every time she's there. Oh my god. And then tip her. Tip her like crazy, just because. Not the asshole. Why is your ex-sister-in-law able to contact you? As much as you didn't like her, I'd have blocked her ages ago. Lol. Yeah, no kidding. I don't use my Facebook often, so I completely forgot about it. She's blocked now. Good. Also, I would complain to the restaurant manager owner. Completely unprofessional. Hey, yeah, you know what? I think I would go that far, but somebody made a point that that is pretty unprofessional, and it is hurting the business by sticking her nose in the OP. Because, yeah, crazy. Oh, my goodness. What is this? Ooh, this looks like it could be interesting. Am I the asshole for telling my friend I won't follow the dress code her fiance wants for the wedding, so it's just better if I don't go at all? I, 24, cover my hair for religious purposes. I've done this since I was 13. My best friend, Kate, 25, knows this, especially considering how we met our first year of high school at age 14. Kate is engaged to Brian. I don't know him all that well, honestly, since he's always been a little standoffish with me. Kate explained that his family is just really religious and they're not used to being around people of different faiths, so he just doesn't know how to talk to me. Well, I mean, he could learn. That's kind of a bullshit excuse, but okay. Mm-hmm. Well, their wedding is going to be in a really lovely church, and I happen to know the owner of the building through work. I have a degree in religious studies, but I dabble in religious architecture as well. So I was able to get a word in for them about having a wedding there. Brian's extended family will be attending, so I guess they have some extra rules about modest dressing for the ceremony. Kate messaged me recently and said that it would make Brian's family feel a little more comfortable if I didn't wear my headscarf at the wedding. She asked if I could wear a wig, which I said no to and explained why. Then she asked why I couldn't just go without for a day, considering that it's not like I make sure my hair is completely covered anyway. I told her that regardless of how much hair I have covered, the point is I'm covering it. I won't be shelving my religion for a day to appease people I won't ever see again. She then said, Brian is really insistent about this, so I told her that if he's not willing to budge anymore, then I'm willing to, then maybe it's best that I just don't go. Kate has been texting me ever since, telling me that I can't just drop out of her wedding like this and that she needs her best friend with her or it wouldn't feel right. Brian texted and told me that she's being inconsolable and that I'm being a terrible friend for choosing something material over her. I love Kate. She's been my friend for nearly 11 years. I just feel awful about the situation. I feel like a jerk for making her cry. I need to know what other people's perspectives if actually am because I know I'm not looking at this clearly. ETA for info. A few people have asked about the different faiths involved here, so I just want to lay it out for context. Ryan and his family are evangelical Christians. I'm Muslim and in an interfaith marriage. My husband is Jewish. So, why? Is this like the synchronicity that's happening right now? Is like people are just so incredibly entitled. I'm just blabbering. I'm going to say this a million times. I'm glad. I'm hoping to eventually get my show on video one day, but I'm almost glad that today that I'm just not. Because like, I swear, like, I could just put a hole in the wall already just reading this nonsense. Like, this is just so fucking insane. The blatant narcissism, the blatant solipsism that people have is just so next level. And solipsism is the idea, it's the ideology that nothing outside of yourself exists. Like, really, truly, honestly, you and your world is the only thing that exists. It is like such next level, like narcissism, that like it's like the top creme de la creme of narcissism. Like that's what it is. It's just, it's so, it just hurts. It hurts reading this today. Holy wow. Anyway, to the comment, not the asshole. She isn't your best friend. If she was, she would have had your back. Well, yeah, no kidding. It's a fucking headscarf. Like, It's not like she's a nudist and your husband asked her to wear clothes for the one day. Like, it's just a headscarf. Who cares? It's a headscarf, guys. Holy wow. If she was any kind of friend, she would respect your religion. If she goes with this rule now, there's no telling what else her fiancé husband will set up for her that she will go along with. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Like, I can't believe this lady is just, like, begging for this kind of abuse. Like, holy wow. Lol, if it means so much to her to be there, then why won't her fiance budge? What a hypocrite. Why is his religion more important? But see, here's the thing is, his evangelical Christianism has literally nothing to do with a Muslim's headscarf. Literally nothing at all. Which is funny because you look at all these different Christianities, like, you know, Mennonite and Orthodox and all these other kinds, and they all require headscarves as well. Catholic, if you're a nun, it requires a headscarf, a headpiece. So, like, wow, like, this buddy is just, guy is just so out to lunch, it's not even funny. Anyway, continuing. I'm assuming they think they're a Christian, in which case they are failing miserably. not the asshole. This isn't something debatable. This is who you are. If he doesn't like it, he doesn't like you. They are being ridiculous through and through. Yes, they are the asshole. You are not the asshole. That was just disgusting to read. What the fuck? I don't even know. I almost want to keep reading a couple more just because these are so insane today. Like, sometimes they're just like, whatever, but like, what the fuck? This one looks good. Am I the asshole for not child-proofing my home against teenagers? I like to relax with THC. Okay, so you smoke a joint, whatever. Or eat a gummy. What the fuck does he even mean? I like to relax with THC. Okay. Just, I like to smoke a weed for after work. Okay, gotcha. Lucky for me, it's legal where I live. I have small kids, so I keep my edibles in my room, in my closet, up high. Pun intended. My niece, Lacey, babysits for me all the time. She's a good girl, and I like having her over. She's a good girl? And I like having her over to give a break from her mom. My sister-in-law is a loving wife and mother, but her personal beliefs can be a little overwhelming. Last week, Lacey was watching my kids, and she had a craving for sweets. My kids told her where I keep my stash of candy that I don't like to share. The poor dummy went and took some of my sour gummy edibles, as well as my regular candy that I don't care to share with my stinking kids. When I got home, the kids were asleep, and Lacey was on the couch staring at her phone and trying to use it as a TV remote. I called my brother, and I told him I would be late, so Lacey would be spending the night. It isn't a problem with us, and it isn't an uncommon situation. In the morning, I had a talk with her about THC and how it wasn't the best idea to use it a lot when you are young. She asked a lot of questions and apologizing for taking my candy without permission. Like I said, she's a good kid, and her mom has drilled some weird beliefs in her. She told her mom what happened. Her mom lost it on me, how I'm a drug addict and how I should be in jail. That I need to childproof my home if I'm going to have narcotics? What? In my home. She is banning Lacey from babysitting for me. What? Tough comment. Am I the asshole for laughing? No. Not the asshole. Tell mom to teach your daughter to not look through other people's belongings and not take things that are hers. Teach her not to steal, LMAO, and she didn't have any business to do be in his stuff. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no kidding. Like, it's just gummies. Like, yeah, probably wasn't a great decision, but, like, honestly, the way dude handled it was, like, so chill. Yeah, I have small kids, so I keep the edibles in my room and my closet up high. My kids told her where I keep my stash of candy that I don't like to share. So you keep the candy hidden in your room, and yet not only do the kids know you have candy in the first place, but even know where it's hidden, something isn't right. You're the asshole, assuming this isn't fake. No. Parents are allowed to have things that kids don't touch. You notice how it wasn't the little kids who were getting into the candy. It was the teenager getting into the candy. Like, the little kids knew, don't touch, because that's daddy's things, but yet the teenager went and did it. Like, what's going on that the little kids know more about privacy and not getting into other people's belongings than the fucking teenager does? Like, I'm sorry, but parents are allowed to have lives. Parents are allowed to own things, too. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah, somebody responded to that. When I was a kid, I used to snoop around in my parents' stuff. It wasn't totally abnormal for me to know where something they were hiding was. Yeah, well, what little kid didn't snoop around and think? But it's another level to actually, like, you know, yeah, no, sorry, I'm not going to agree with that. If you need to, like, put some gummy bears in a locked case to keep it away from a grown-ass teenager, you got problems. You got problems. That's just my opinion. So, people can disagree with that all they want. But the kids were taught the teenager could have texted. I mean, she had a phone. She could have texted, hey, do you have any candy? I kind of want some candy. No, I don't have any candy. What about the candy in your closet? No, don't touch the candy. This is a teenager. They have the capacity to ask. Actually, you know what? I'm going to respond with a comment. It's kind of weird that small children knew there was candy that shouldn't be touched, but yes, the teenager. Anyway. Nah, that's it. A lot of people are saying they're the asshole. Nah, you shouldn't have to keep some gummy bears in a locked off safe. Like, and if it's anything that actually needs to be kept in a locked off safe, probably shouldn't be taking it in the first place. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to do one more and then we're going to move on because I'm going to go find something else to rant and complain about. Last one. Am I the asshole for enrolling my stepdaughter in boarding school despite my husband's wishes? I don't know. Let's check this out. I, 21 or 29, female, am married to Sam, 51, male. So he's like 20 years older than you. Wait a minute. Oh, okay. 29 female, married to Sam, 51 male, have one stepdaughter, Laura, 16 female. Laura's mom, Kate, died when she was a baby, but Sam has always kept her image alive in Laura's life by keeping Kate's family and friends in Laura's life. Kate went to boarding school when she was a teen and even went back there to teach for a while. It was the best time of her life, according to videos she took when she was there and from her family and friends, told us. Laura has always wanted to go there when she was a kid, but we said no, it was too far in a neighboring country when she was young. But now that she's older, she's decided on going there. Sam keeps saying no. He's worried she might become distant from him living so far away and that she might fall into bad company. What happens when they grow up? You teach them the best you can when they're little to make appropriate decisions, and then when they get old enough, they go into the real world. Like, that's the whole point of raising kids, is do the best you can, hope you did the best you can, and then when they go out in the world, they go and live life and explore. And you're just there for them, to support and love them in whatever way they need. Like, oh, my God. Anyway. I disagree. I think she's 16. I think at 16 she's more than responsible enough and it will only be for 2 years. He still kept saying no and Laura was pressuring me to convince him. I kept getting stuck between them. The deadline kept coming near and Laura kept crying to me about begging me, so I decided to go ahead and apply. She needed me to pay the application fee. Even though Sam was against it, he knew I was applying. She got in and I went ahead and paid the tuition. Sam is now very mad at me. He says I had no right and the mood around our house is intense. Kate's parents agree with me, as do my in-laws, but my sister-in-law said I had no right. Am I the asshole? I don't know what to do. How do I convince him? Edit, I am Laura's legal guardian, so I can legally send her. Even though Laura doesn't call me mom, she and I have a very close relationship. The reason we are close is partly because I have always respected Kate and her memory and never tried to take over. Kate is mom and will always be, but important to Laura too. Please stop undermining my role in her life just because we are not related by blood. One reason I applied is that if I didn't, she would never get to apply again. The school doesn't accept students for older grades, so it was now or never. Sam has still till August to change his mind, but if he doesn't, Laura knows she has to stay. The other reason is that it would damage our relationship with Laura. She was... This font changed, and it's a lot thicker. Let me grab my freaking glasses. Can't even look at this. My goodness. Here we go. That's better. She has wanted this since she could remember. She grew up watching videos Kate took when she was there. It's her dream to go where her mom went, to be close to her. It's where Kate spent the best years of her life and the last years of her life, as she died only 4 months after moving to our current country and giving birth. If this ends up breaking Sam and me up, it's a cost I'm willing to take as long as Laura gets to live her dream. Well, yeah, top comments, not the asshole. If anything, you're trying to keep his daughter from hating him. Preventing her from going is what will create distance, and he is trying to prevent life cut off. Yeah, it sounds like he's scared of letting her go because he's scared of losing her, blah, blah, blah. And that would manifest the situation in which it would create the problems that he's scared of in the first place. So, my goodness. I read too many of those today. Twitter now. I haven't even been on Twitter in like a few weeks, you guys. Like, holy smokes. Like, I'm not even going to lie. I've actually been on Telegram a lot more than I have been on Twitter. Just because of all the things that are going on with world current events, I have been like so busy and consumed in trying to get stuff done around my yard and get stuff done with my up-and-coming coaching business. I am looking to do life coaching to be able to help people reach their full potential in ways that they see fit. So if you come to life coaching with me, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what you can and cannot do. I'm going to sit there and further explore how you feel, why you feel the way you do, and get you to find your own solutions. Because, like, you know, honestly, guys, it's like when I became a doula years and years ago already, like, midwifery is interesting to me, and I have been, like, researching here a little there, a little here, a little there on midwifery, because, you know, having somebody in the room that actually knows what they're doing is nice, but being a doula is what really, really made a lot of sense to me, because I also don't like making decisions for people unless I absolutely have to. I don't care to be the authority in the room in certain regards if I absolutely don't have to, especially when it comes to emergencies, because, like, people rely on you to be the one that know what to do, but if you're inexperienced or you just don't have that knowledge and you screw it up, then you're on the hook. And I know, like, here in Saskatchewan, you know, like, there is, like, the Good Samaritan Act that, you know, if you do things without blatant negligence in good conscience, that you can get off the hook, but, like, my goodness, you can still get in a lot of trouble, and I just don't feel like being the one that could potentially screw something up. So as a doula, what doulas do is they provide you with all the resources, they provide you with all the information, and then they let you, they don't even let you, because you're not really the authority. You make the decision, and then they support you in your decision. And if you change your decision, you just go back and you start reevaluating the information that's available and provided, and then work on a plan again on how to support you. And I really like that because it is woman-centered. It is the individual that you're serving-centered. They make all the decisions because at the end of the day, you can walk away and you don't have to deal with none of that bullshit. When a woman has her baby, like, that sounds really, like, really harsh and, like, you know, whatever to say. But it's just like, but I'm not the one having the baby. I'm not the one that has to raise that baby. I'm not the one that has to deal with the finances of that baby, with the emotions that come with that baby, the family dynamics of the community, well, depending on how far that community reaches. A lot of the people you serve as a doula, you know, you're a little, sometimes you become friends and a lot of times you don't. It's a business deal. So, you know, you essentially, just like being a doctor, you just kind of walk away from it. You know, it's like you do the best you can to help, but at the end of the day, it's not your birth. That's the number one thing that doulas have to remember when they want their client to act in a certain way or they want them to have a certain birth or anything like that. If you're listening to this right now and you are, if you know a friend who's a doula, you know somebody who's going to be a doula, you're interested in being a doula, just that's the number one thing to remember is it is not your birth. Period. Point blank. It is not you. It's not about you. It's about the woman who is having the baby. Period. Point blank. And her husband, if, you know, he's in the picture too, if you have, like, you know, that dynamic that you're trying, but ultimately it's hers. She's the one growing a little human. She's the one delivering that little human. And she's probably going to be the main caretaker when it comes to that little human. You know, if you're a birth and labor doula, it's not your birth. Which is why I also wanted to get into life coaching because, you know, there's a lot of aspects to doulaing and life coaching that are entirely the same. And I love it. I love being able to have somebody realize their own potential without me really having to do fuck all except for help you realize your full potential. It's not like I have to go do the research for you. It's not like, you know, I need to tutor you, I guess one could say. Not even so much counsel. Like, I don't even have to counsel you. It's like, the way they do it is by asking questions, a lot of questions. And I love asking questions. This is what my whole show is about, right? If you've been here a long time listener, if you've been with me since I started the show on Freedomizer way back in the day, like what, 5 years ago already? Probably like around 5 years ago. That was what my show was about, is interviewing people and like seeing where they had come from and how they got to where they were, and that's all I did was ask questions. You know, make some comments here or there, but, like, the asking questions is so incredibly important, and people do not ask enough questions anymore. And it's actually really interesting that not only do they not ask enough questions anymore, they don't really know how to ask questions. And it's, like, really super-duper disappointing that people just don't know how to question things. Genuinely, truly, honestly, they don't know how to question things. And, like, on top of that, not only do they not know how to have question things, they go forward and they don't know how to remove emotional attachment when it comes to questioning. Because too many people out there, when they're asking questions, have the wrong intent, the wrong motive. They're not genuinely curious. They don't want to go on a discovery session with you. Too many people ask these questions with ill intent rather than going on a curiosity binge where it's like, I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know why. Like, why do you think that way? Is there something I can gain from this? But not to say like in an ill way, but is there a way that I can improve myself through the information that I'm about to gather here in this conversation that we're about to have? Obviously, life coaching is different. It's about helping the individual understand themselves through a questioning period. It's not about you. It's about your client. And I know that comes with a lot of things, with everything out there, when, you know, chiropractic and doctor and fucking psychologist and, you know, everything out there, it's about the client. It's not about you. It's about your client. But this is like taking it to, like, that next step, especially when you start –
Questions are my letter of recommendation. It is obvious their hearts are a letter of approval from Messiah. Dionysus from the 405 BC play the beggar and Jesus of Nazareth quote the same line, kicking against the pricks. That is plausible, is it not? Am I not an apostle?
Let's study this and more proof that a test of whom we love exists in the New Testament canon. Join Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul, which airs Saturdays noon Pacific, 1 Mountain, 2 Central, and 3 Eastern for 3 hours on Saturdays, where listeners enjoy fellowship and study of the words of Messiah versus yours, Paul. 3195276208. Saturdays at noon Pacific.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Salve Coagula.
Salve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
Son of position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya
right where I want ya. Like a raw lion in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a gore.
Can you hear me now?
Just all part of the game.
Can't deceive us all, or now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow where we're Satan's.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
We all know that times are tough and things are really expensive right now, so why not save a little bit of your wallet as well as the landfill. Marty.com carries high quality products at low, low prices, sometimes up to 70% off of retail. I just got a wonderful package of beef jerky for 1 cent sent to my house through Marty.com. Marty.com offers high quality products at discount prices. Why? Well, sometimes products are seasonal or overstocked, or packaging just changes. It's still great quality food, but it's going to end up in the landfill if we don't find some way to distribute it. And leave that to Marty.com. Now, if you want to save a little extra today, you can get $20 off your first order by going to our Facebook group for Dynamic Word Bible Studies and picking up a discount code there. So check out Dynamic Word Bible Studies at Facebook and find Marty.com on our comments. You'll be able to get this free discount code. It's going to give you $20 off, and it's also a great way to support our show and to keep those landfills light and to save some money in your wallet. And I'm all about saving money. So check out Marty.com.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Hello, everybody. This is Open World. Sorry for the abrupt cut-offness that had just occurred prior to the commercial break. That was not my intention. My phone has been acting really weird this last little while. It'll be fine, and all of a sudden, it'll just hang up. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on. It just loves to hang up. So I guess continuing on, that's kind of why I'm hoping to get into things like life coaching. That's why I'm kind of hoping to, you know, be able to help people explore themselves, because studies have actually shown, you know, rather than you offering them the solution, studies actually show that when they come up with their own solution and they come up with their own plan and they find a way that they can be responsible for themselves, they're a lot more willing to commit and to follow through, which is actually really, really neat, because, you know, that just goes to show more of, you know, the individual journey that each one of us are taking as we move through life. Because as much as it really makes a lot of people mad, the left, people on the left love to say that it's all about the collective. We are nothing without the collective, et cetera, et cetera. People on the right say that it's all about the individual. It's all about you, yourself, and I, and you making your way in the world. When you start looking into things like left brain dynamics and right brain dynamics, you know, there's a lot of things you can discuss about that. Left and right brain hemisphere, you know, we'll cover that on another show another day, but we'll just stick with this for now. Hate to break it to y'all, but it's not the collective or the individual. Gotta be a healthy balance of both, and that will piss a lot of people off in terms of being able to ask questions and be able to remove emotion, because, you know, everybody on the left is like super emotional and those kinds of things, and everybody in the right tries to be a bunch of psychopaths that have no emotions at all, and it's all about facts. Well, guess what? Hate to break it to you again, but it's about balance. If we are meant to be an individual expression of a collective consciousness, we're here to learn the lessons that we're meant to learn and then move on to whatever existence exists outside of here. We're here for a short amount of time in reality when it comes to the amount of time that the planet has been here. And some people can say that's a couple thousand years, and some people can say that's like, you know, a couple million years. I mean, the truth of the matter is, do we really know? I don't know. I just know that in the meantime, we should try to do good while we're here. We're trying to learn the lessons that we need to learn while we're here. And try to build and be creative while we're here. Try to further ourselves in a way that's actually going to benefit humanity outside of what we think is just going to benefit, but like the objective reality of the occult information that's been given to us that they try to hide from us on a higher level and then convince us of a bunch of this bullshit, where the left is screeching about the capitalism and the right is screeching about the communism. And it's like, can we not just have a balance of both? I know they're not exactly able to have both, but when you look at things like, you know, free market capitalism in an agorist society, volunteerism, so to speak, where you really need to work on yourself, and you need to get yourself in alignment. You need to do your own shadow work, and you need to, you know, get all these things done in order to be able to make all these things happen. What in the world? My phone is just pushing random buttons. Maybe there's a ghost in my house. I don't even know. Ghost in my house. Because my phone is just getting random buttons, but I don't know. If I have a ghost in my house, if you could at least make me a fucking coffee, that'd be great. That's all I have to say. Make yourself welcome, but make me supper or something, because I'm not going to sit here and be freaked out over nothing. Gotta smudge my damn house, apparently. But, you know, it's like I was telling some friends the other day. It really sucks. Actually, it wasn't even friends, because I'm the ambassador for the Saskatchewan Fringe Farm Network. The Fringe Farm Net is a network of individuals who are looking to build a parallel economy utilizing food production and small businesses, and helping them achieve economic freedom, financial freedom, on top of helping them ride out the Great Reset, because whether we like it or not, it's coming. We can sit here and fight all day long about stopping it and this and that. The only way we're going to be able to save ourselves from whatever they have planned for us and whatever's coming is to be able to civilly resist and to quit fighting with one another when it comes to the semantics of the bullshit, when it comes to a lot of this. Unfortunately, external solutions are absolutely wonderful. Don't get me wrong. If you think that I'm going to start and tell you guys, don't bother starting to save food. Don't bother, like, you know, looking into gold and crypto. Don't bother into doing things like learning how to live self-sustainably or learning how to hunt or fish or build things or anything. Like, don't take that the wrong way. Absolutely, we need to be working on those things. 1,001%, I completely concur. However, in the long scheme of things, if we don't learn how to be healthier in our being and work collaboratively rather than dependently, and you're actually going to see a lot of conversation about this, especially in relationships, like, you know, spousal relationships where it's that codependency, where they have to rely on one another. And I know there's certain aspects that can be exempt from that, because as much as I like to think that I'm a tough guy, I can't lift the water tank that's on the back of the truck outside onto the trailer. My husband can. You know, it's like I do have some physical limitations. That's not to say that I couldn't come up with some other plan or come up with some other means, but the way we currently do it, I can't do it myself, you know? But we're talking about, like, codependency, where it's like you have to have the other individual in order to make things work. I don't think that's healthy, because if one of you, for whatever reason, becomes ill, either in body, soul, mind, spirit, you die, or you decide this isn't for you and you want to go on and do something else with your life, it doesn't work, because it leaves you basically up shit creek with a paddle, which is also not a great position to be in. But being two very able-bodied individuals who can function on their own but work collaboratively, that's where we want to really, truly, honestly be at. Because it's like, you know, okay, imagine this. You have a whole village, and your village has like 50 to 100 people or something. It's a small village. We're not talking about a big village. We're talking about a small village here. Like, you know, like the, you have to pull your weight to survive village, not pull your weight to, you know, be part of a functioning society. We're talking about pulling your weight to survive. If one of you dies, you're in trouble. Now, you have, you know, 100 people in your little village, and you have one blacksmith. Nobody else can do blacksmithing, just that. Talk about phone problems today. You know, if there's anybody listening right now and if there's like a solar flare or something, I know there's like a solar eclipse coming up, but like this is just crazy pants. I can usually go like hours and hours being able to chat on the phone and nothing goes wrong. And today it's just like, nope, I got about 20 minutes every time, maybe half an hour. And then it's just like, nope. So forgive me for the tech problems for days. So yeah, going back to my point here, you know, you've got one blacksmith in your entire freaking village and your blacksmith decides to just nope out one day. His heart just decides to nope out and you don't have anybody else. You've now got 99 people and not a single one of them know how to make horseshoes. They don't know how to do blacksmithing at all. They don't know how to do nothing. Now you've got 99 people that are up Shit Creek without a paddle that now they have to find somebody else. And like, you know, blacksmiths usually take on like apprentices and things to show them, but they usually take on a few of them, you know? Whereas think of this scenario. You've got like out of the 100 people, you've got 50 people that know how to do it. Granted, only one or two of them know how to do it really well, but you've still got 50 people that can get the job done. So the guy who can do it really, really well, he nopes out one day because, you know, we all nope out at some point, whether we like it or not, our time on this planet is limited. So he just one day wants up and nopes out. Now you've got 99 people, but you've still got, you know, 49 people that actually know how to do this and another one or two that can still do it well. You know, it's like everybody has their natural things that they gravitate to. Some people like music, some people like medicine, some people like building things. Like, you know, it's not to say that you shouldn't follow your passions, because if that's where your passion is at, absolutely follow your passions. But not being able to do the basics and having to rely on somebody else for absolutely everything, you are going to be in so much trouble when that individual ceases to exist. In this physical realm anyway. That's not to say that they don't exist somewhere else, or, you know, maybe you believe they reincarnate or whatever. But, I mean, even if they do reincarnate, you've got like another 15, 16 years before they're of use to you again in that capacity, borderline, because they're only a teenager then. They'll probably have to go through and relearn everything, in which case you've got another like 20, 30 years, my friend. Do you really want to wait that long, or do you want to like get on it and actually learn those things and be able to do them? You might not be able to do them well, but you'll be able to do them today so that you're not in trouble when, you know, those kinds of things happen. Individual expression of a collective consciousness. And this is something that the people at the top have been lying to us over and over. And it actually slightly irritates me just a wee bit. I'm not able to remove my emotions entirely when I have a conversation with somebody who thoroughly believes that individualism is bad. It's like, but like, you live in your own house, don't you? Well, yeah. Well, you have your own hobbies, don't you? Well, yeah. Well, you have your own bank account, don't you? Well, yeah. Well, you have a job that you get to pick and choose that you want, right? Well, yeah. Okay, so please explain to me where you being able to govern your own life according to the way that you see fit is a bad thing. I don't see that as a bad thing, because if we're only going to go by the collective's wants and the collective's needs, you're going to have everything taken away from you. You're going to be told what you're going to do based on your best ability, and that's not going to work in your favor. Same with individualism, where everybody just works and only does the things that they want to do, and they don't collaborate or anything with one another. They're only for themselves. We also have a really bad issue, whereas if you have a bunch of people, once again, who understand their individualism and their ability to function on their own and be able to handle things for the most part on their own and be able to work collaboratively with other people, remaining in healthy boundaries, having healthy communication, and most importantly, being healthy within yourself, that society is just going to really take off. It's going to really, really, really take off. And as soon as I really, truly, just with everything that's going on in Canada, the United States, like across the whole planet, people are so close to figuring this out that it's not even funny. This button keeps pushing. What is going on here? People, my phone might hang up again here soon. This is what it did the last time. It did the button, and then like 10 minutes or 15 minutes later, it hung up. So I apologize again if it hangs up again here right away. But people are getting really close to figuring this out through and through. they're starting to figure out, thank God, who have been using them for abusive experiments. They're using them to control their minds, control their bodies. And, like, this is why I don't, like, crap too much on the younger generation, is they can see through this and they comprehend that they're being put in this position, that they don't have to serve the cog in the machine, that they can be themselves. Now, unfortunately, they've been given a lot of shitty schooling and a lot of crappy parenting, so to speak, with the state and with the things they're being taught in school. Not to say that everything they're being taught in school is a waste of their time, but using the first 18 years of our lives to be taught a bunch of absolute nonsense, most of which we'll never use for the rest of our life. I mean, if they're going to be teaching like calculus and stuff, why aren't they teaching about Tesla? Like, if we're going to be taking it that level, why are we not teaching about things like free energy and shit? If we're going to be talking about physics and stuff anyway, let's take this next level. Instead, we're taught the Pythagorean theorem, and that's as far as it goes. You know, it's like, it's really, really disturbing what they've done with schools. And when you start researching what they've done with schools, that they're just wasting people's time, wasting years of their life for absolutely nothing, setting them up with no essentials, putting them out in the world when they're not emotionally regulated, they're not people regulated, they're not mentally regulated, they're not stimulated at all, and half of them are confused to the point that they can't even function in a healthy society, but they expect the world. Now, again, that's not to say that you aren't of value and that you don't have things to contribute. You most certainly do, even as a young individual. A lot of these young people that are coming out, they have excellent ideas. A lot of them have excellent work ethic and stuff. A lot of them just simply don't have the experience. But they have, in many ways, like the naivety that's good in the terms of creativity and being able to explore ideas, whereas our elders in society, it's like, we've been there, we've done that. Let's see if we can come up with something new. You know? It's like, I think it's really interesting and really messed up, to be honest, that we have this Hegelian dialectic between the elderly population and the younger generation, that they just hate each other. It's like, you see it a lot with like the millennials and the boomers. It's like, why do the millennials and the boomers hate each other so much? Like, I've never really understood. Like, I can see why the millennials are like, well, the boomers are so out of touch with everything, blah, blah, blah. They set us up for failure. It's just like, but you're still using the same system that they created that was going to make you fail. You have all the power, all the opportunity to civilly resist the system and build something new. And instead, you sit on your Xboxes and bitch and whine about the boomers. And then the boomers are just like, you know, oh, these young people, they don't know how to work today, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, my entire life, I've worked 2 to 3 jobs and have been going to school while I've been working those 2 to 3 jobs. I mean, yeah, technically right now, I don't actually technically have a job, but like, I'm raising my 2 little people and homeschooling my 2 little people. I've got Nicky Knox. I've got my own thrift store that I'm starting to start up. I mean, you could call it thrift. I'm calling it an agora, but, you know, if you don't understand agorism or anything, you know what? I think that would be a really good discussion. I'm going to go through the book, Samuel Konkin, An Agorist Primer, and we're going to sit down one of these days in the very near future, and we're going to explore a lot more about this, because I think this would be a good book and good concepts to go over, especially in terms of parallel economy and gray market happenings, not black market, but gray market when it comes to the economic collapse that they have bringing in, that they're trying to bring in the central banking crypto dollar, whatever the hell, the CBDCs that they're working on bringing in to, you know, bring in the social credit score and make your body currency, which is actually really funny. Before I get back on that other topic again, when you start looking at things like birth certificates and how you're being used for chattel and securities and, you know, securities and all these other things, and you look up in Canadian legislation, the Ownership Control and Determination Act, fun fact for you, Control Ownership and Determination Act was actually brought in, and the guy who actually brought it in, he actually ended up quitting his job after he did that, because a friend of mine, Robin Bellinger, you know what, I'm going to have Robin on the show again one of these days, and because he was talking about that, and he actually brought that up, because he actually had a discussion with this guy, and when he had a discussion with this guy, he was just like, this sounds like a lot of like a slavery legislation. And Buddy was just like, that's because it is. When you read the Control, Ownership, and Determination Act, it defines that this act is supposed to be for any certificate issued by Canada to determine how much of the certificates, the business, the corporations, or whatever that it's being issued to that they own. But the funny part about this legislation that they brought in is they tell you that it's just for businesses and corporations, but they don't define that in the act at all. They don't say anywhere in the act that it's actually for a business corporation kind of thing, like, you know, like Walmart or anything like that. They just say certificates. What else has certificates? Things like marriage licenses, things like birth certificates. You know, when you start looking into these things, you're like, whoa. And then when you pop over to the Canadian Interpretation Act and you look up what a person means, it includes a corporation. And right in the Interpretation Act, the plural is the singular and the singular is the plural. So when it says include, it's a variety of things. When it says includes, it's that one thing. So it's really interesting when you go over and you take a peek at this, and it says that it includes the corporation. So anytime you see a person in Canadian legislations, unless defined otherwise, it is the corporation, which is your birth certificate issued. So when you start looking in a patent 060606 from Bill Gates, utilizing the body's electromagnetic system as a form of cryptocurrency to be able to buy and sell the things you need that they determine that you can have. It's kind of really interesting that most people are already being mind controlled into thinking that this is acceptable and have been since the Big Bang collapse in the 30s when they brought in like if you look in the United States, was Woodrow Wilson when he brought in Social Security, is when they started bringing this stuff in. You've been, people my age, their entire lives have been using their bodies as a cog in the system, and they have no idea. And it's kind of cute. It's kind of cute getting into arguments with people where they say, well, that can't be possible. We need taxes, blah, blah, blah. So why do you need a violent, coercive system in order to be a decent human being? Can we ask ourselves that question? Why do you need the threat of having everything taken away from you and having your ass, especially when a lot of these same people crap on things like religion? Well, isn't that what religion is about? Well, if you don't be a good human being on earth, you're going to go to hell? Well, that's silly. That's, you know, there's some people out there that'll even go so far as to say that that's child abuse if you tell that to your child, but yet they still believe in those same things through their actions while they're here in reality. Like, wait a minute, back up, back up. You might want to take a step back and actually start asking questions about that. And instead of getting offended and emotional over it and say, well, these things are necessary, well, maybe you need to question those things. Maybe you need to do a little bit deeper exploring into why you think that way. Because I know that's one of the questions that people say, or the one of the complaints people have, well, if not everybody, if we don't force people to pay their taxes, nobody's going to do it. Well, I thought you said the collective was a good thing. So now you're saying you're scared that the individual doesn't have the capacity to be responsible? Is that what you're telling me? You're telling me that you're not adult enough to be able to look after your neighbors without being threatened to do so? Because that's what I'm hearing. In which case, why? Why don't we take a deeper step and explore that? Why don't we look a little deeper into that? What was going on in your childhood that you seem to think that if you are not doing what you're told to do, that you're going to have your ass beat and have everything taken away from you? Oh, wait a minute, because we do things like threaten to take our children's toys away if they don't clean their room. We threaten to put them into detention if they don't do what the teacher tells them to do. Well, wait a minute, why do we have an entire system based off of coercion and control? Huh, interesting. Interesting, isn't it? So you mean to tell me that I have mommy and daddy issues because they weren't raised either? Yes. Yes, I do mean to tell you that. And if that offends you, suck it up, Buttercup. Sorry to say, but that's the way it is. You've been lied to. You've been lied to on a fundamental level because you were never given the opportunity. And up until recent, a lot of this knowledge and this way of thinking has been occulted, and a lot of it has been perpetuated onto you due to things like fear. If I don't do what I'm told, then I'm going to be left alone, playing the individual against the collective, because we're social creatures. We're meant to be working in collaboration with other human beings. It's a fundamental, deep down, it's reptilian brain threat, where if I am left alone, if I'm not part of the herd, that I might be cut off and I might not make it because there's big, scary things out there that could come get me. And once upon a time, that was lions, tigers, and bears, but now it's things like government. It's government. Why do you think the government goes after people who actually stand up and makes examples of them? Why do you think big corporations make examples of people? Because they know that the majority of people are mind-controlled herd animals. And you can say, well, I'm not an animal, so then why are you acting like one? And honestly, sometimes that's even insulting to animals too. Because I live on a farm. I live on a farm, and I see the way that animals act, and I look at the way that I treat my animals, and indeed, I try to treat them myself. I try to treat them the best I can myself, because they deserve a healthy, happy life. But a lot of the ways we treat our animals on the farm are a lot of the ways that the elite treat us from the top down. You don't know what you're doing. You don't have the capacity to go live on your own and be free. I mean, for example, if you have, a herd of cattle and you have one cow or a bull that keeps breaking out of the fence, constantly breaking out of that fence, running around, they just want to be free so bad. Generally, what do you do with them? You put them down. You put them on the table. Because you don't want that one animal constantly causing you issues and possibly influencing all the other animals that are within the fence. You don't want them influencing those other animals. So you put that quote-unquote problem animal down, and you put them on the table. You solve the issue that way. Do you see where I'm coming from? Do you see now why they start going after the people at the top, or the people who try to stand out? The people at the top try and go after the people who stand out? Because you're a problem animal to them. We are on a farm. We are on a people farm. And this is what they're trying to do with these 15-minute cities, is they're trying to push everybody into these 15-minute cities by lying to everybody, yet again, to tell them, hey, these are going to be the things that you're going to want to do because it's going to make you happy. It's going to have access to all the things you want in life within like a short walk. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. Really, though? Is it going to be, though? And what am I going to have to sacrifice in order to be able to access those things? Why can't I just have those things without the government say-so? Going back to life coaching. Life coaching is unregulated. And don't get me wrong. There are a lot of problem people out there who are money-hungry cretins who don't really truly care about their clients. They're just in it to make a buck. And those are often the ones that when they don't really truly understand or care for why they're actually doing it, and they're just in it to, make money and, get clout and make a business. They're also the ones that tend to, when they realize what they're actually doing, tend to step back and call out all these other ones, and then they want regulation and blah, blah, blah. Well, why do we need regulation in this industry? Why can't you just regulate yourself? Because if we have a bunch of individuals regulating themselves, genuinely caring about the people that they're actually, trying to help, it's like if you have those kinds of people, what do we need Big Daddy government's permission for? What do we need their permission for? I mean, the definition of a license is to do something otherwise illegal, to be given permission from a competent authority to do something otherwise illegal. Well, wait a minute. What determines legalities? What determines those legalities? And what do you mean by competent authority? What is authority? How did we get here where we have a bunch of men in suits saying that we're smarter than you, we know more than you, so therefore what you're doing, which you could have just been doing yesterday, was just fine, even though it wasn't hurting anybody, I got in my car, and I decided to zip around and go get some milk. And then the next day, suddenly what I was just doing yesterday where I wasn't hurting anybody, I'm now being told that I don't have the ability to determine whether or not what I was doing was good or right, that I now need permission from some guy that I've never met who thinks that he knows more than me to tell me what I can and cannot do with my life. Wait the fuck a minute. That's kind of interesting, don't you think? Kind of weird. Because for anything to be illegal, for anything to be legal, it has to be unlawful. Because I have the ability to go from point A to point B. I have the ability to make a living for myself. And I like to create. I mean, trust me, don't get me wrong. If money was no such thing, like, I could most certainly live without fiat currency. I mean, I'm sure humans would eventually come to a point where, you know, they would find some sort of a medium of exchange. I'm sure they would, whether it be gold, silver, sheepskins. People have always engaged in trade. You know, it's just the only nice thing about things like fiat currency or gold or things like that, or now even crypto, that people can recognize this medium of exchange as something with a perceived value, even though it really truly has no value. And this is like, you know, when you start digging into things like crypto and agorism and stuff like that, like, money actually has no value. It is just the value that we place on it that we've collectively determined that will be the value of. But that doesn't even mean the same thing to many people. We are, again, individual expressions of a collective consciousness. You know, take, for example, a necklace that you inherited from grandma. For one grandkid, it might not mean fuck all. Oh, great, I got this necklace from grandma. I'm going to go sell it for $5 because that's how much it means to me. I don't care. It has no value to me. Whereas the next grandkid, that might be worth like $1 million for me. I wouldn't trade my soul for it. So what is it about perceived value that people hold different perceptions of value, and what is important to different people, you know? It's like we collectively determine, but then again, like, who is collectively determining? Who makes $5 worth $5? Like, when I have a $5 bill in my hand, who determined that it's worth $5? And who determines what is worth $5? Because you see these people selling like whole ass horses for like $100 on Kijiji, and then you see these other people selling whole ass horses for $5,000 on Kijiji. Well, again, perceived value. Who determines the value and why? You know, it's like, this is one of the things that I actually find really, really interesting in like the coaching world. And actually one of the things that I've been chuckling quite a lot about, in particular with these people who are warning people, I guess one could say, about life coaches and this and that, and wanting regulation. And they want a standard that is set by a few people that everybody needs to follow the rules, that a lot of these people charge too much. But again, determines how much is too much. Who determines that? You know? It's really interesting when you start asking questions and you start really digging deep. And you start looking into these things, you know, and removing emotion from these things, that I think, especially in terms of healthy debate, which is something we really, truly, unfortunately, do not have anymore when it comes to healthy debate, everybody just argues and gets extremely emotional right away, which is frustrating, in my personal opinion. It's just... especially online. Not so much in my experience in person, but especially online, that the majority of communication has been removed through speaking to somebody online. Because all you see is words. And if they're doing all caps and stuff, they might very well mean to be like yelling at you and stuff. But some people, like, I've run into people that, like, they just do all caps all the time. I'm like, why are you yelling? And they're like, I'm not yelling. I literally just can't see. My glasses are broken, and I need to have all caps in order to be able to see. I'm like, okay, so why don't you just adjust the settings on your device? Because you can zoom in, you know, if that would make it easier on your eyes, they're like, I don't know how to do that. Well, here, let me show you how. You know, like, I will take 5 minutes and I will show you how to zoom in so that, you know, you're not getting negative reactions from everybody around you because they are unwilling to take a minute and actually be able to comprehend where you're coming from. Now, that's not to say that, like, you know, if they don't want to, I don't want to zoom in or anything, well, then, you know, well, you know, it sounds like you're yelling at everybody, so you're going to have to take a minute to actually, like, reflect on yourself. But that's another conversation for another time. But being able to have healthy debate, you know what, I might just go find that video again and post it because I feel like, you know, this would be really good to have that link. I found a video the other day, about 10 or 15 minutes long, I think, and this guy is, like, a national debater or something. He's wrote a book, like, he knows what he's talking about. And that was actually one thing that he was talking about, is like, don't know how to have healthy debate anymore. They are so steadfast that you need to believe what I believe in its entirety, otherwise I am going to berate and belittle and attempt to destroy you. You know, funny story about this. And it's actually one of the silliest reasons that I have ever been befriended on Facebook for. Like, I literally was so, like, flabbergasted at what I was told. Like, it fucked me up so bad. But it made me realize a lot of this stuff. So back in, like, the COVID days, shit like that was going on. Back, yeah. Just a spoiler alert, if you don't know me, I fell for the bullshit at the beginning. And that turned around for me when I realized that there was no isolate. And then when I started looking a little bit deeper into it, and when they started pushing the vaccine, it's not even a vaccine, it's gene therapy. But when they started pushing that as the answer, I knew right then, like, what, 4 months in that I had been, or 2 months in, I had been following that stuff that was starting to happen in China since 3 or 4 days before the lockdown. When most people were just like, oh, it's not going to be a problem, blah, blah, blah. I was freaking out because I was watching all these videos of these people dropping dead and having seizures in the street. And, you know, China lies. Not to say Chinese people are bad people, but the government is not exactly ideal when it comes to a lot of things, unfortunately. That's the whole collectivism. Yes, they can build hospitals very, very, very fast. They can build a whole-ass hospital in the week. But if you have an opinion that is outside of what the collective wants you to have, you'll end up in jail and go missing for, you know, 8 months, year and a half, while they reprogram you, and then they let you out in the public, but they take away your internet and stuff, things like that. You know, it's not exactly great, but it was actually really wild because I was watching all these videos, and I was watching these people, like, being locked in their homes and suffering, and, like, when I'm talking to people on, like, these, you know, WhatsApp chats and, like, all these people, and, like, these people are just mentally being tortured and suffering. And I remember having a flip out because, like, you know, people didn't care. Like, it actually, like, really at how little people in North America cared for anybody across this planet because it wasn't happening in North America, so why should it concern me? And I actually got defriended by a lady who got mad at me. And she's like, it's one thing for you to be concerned about this and care about this. But as soon as you start telling others what they should do, that's where I draw the line. And it's like, on one hand, I could understand where she was coming from. But it's like, number one, I wasn't defriending people or giving people ultimatums that, like, if you don't care about these people, defriend me, or, you know, if you are this, defriend me, or just cutting people off that were just, like, you know, making fun of it or anything. Like, I wasn't doing any of that. It just fucked me up the most. Care about other people. That was the line drawn for her. That she's like, you know what, no, I don't want to be your friend. Because you're asking me to care, and you shouldn't be telling me what to do. It's just like, okay. That was interesting. No healthy debate, no exploration going anything deeper. That was just, you know, oh no, did my computer just shut off? Ah, fudgicles. My devices are just not working for me here today. Give me one second here, guys. My computer just decided to go for a night-night. Because, you know, why not? Come back to me, computer. Like, I really do think that we need to start going back to that, and we need to start being able to have discussions again. And instead of being stuck in this left-right brain paradigm where you're only allowed to believe one thing and you're only allowed to do one thing and you have to identify as a certain label if you don't believe that one thing. It's just like that, okay. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand the need for labels in certain contexts, because the reason why we developed language and communication is because being able to put a label on something that is unanimous, that, you know, the overwhelming majority of people can agree on its definition, helps us to be able to bring new ideas and new creations into the world. You know, this is why it's like things are getting so messed up that they keep changing the definitions of words and stuff all the time that people can't properly communicate anymore. And you see a lot of this in like the LGBTQ community, and not to slam on them super duper hard, but like this is the one thing that like this is starting to slide, where it's like, you are who you feel that you are, and labels don't matter. And it's like, okay, I can get what you're trying to say here, that you're trying to take the human experience outside of labels, outside of just vibrations that we create with our voice. However, our voice has power. The world works with vibrations and energy and electricity and things like electromagnetism, whatever, I can't see that word. But this is how these things operate. At the same time, though, I don't think it's good to only be so hard on one label that, like, that is the little box you need to stay into. You know, we got to find that balance. And, like, there's nothing wrong with creating new words either. There's nothing wrong with a word having its definition and then creating new words. Like, that's the neat thing about language, is we can make new words. We can do those things. And a lot of it has to do with intent. Like, you see these little experiments that these kids do with their parents, and they have, like, a jar of rice or a little plant or something in the one thing, and then they have, like, oh, good words or good vibes. And then the other jar, they have, like, you know, they've got, like, two little jars, and they have, like, rice or plant or whatever, and that other word or that other plant, and jar. Wow. And then they put like bad words. And then for like a certain period of time, like I've seen everything from like 1 week to 90 days, that you use words with ill intention and you speak these things into existence directed at that certain thing. And after a certain period of time, that thing is in more poor quality than the other thing. Up to and including the rice starting to go bad, or if you've pulled two leaves, like people have done experiments, where they'll take a leaf, they'll put it in like one part of the room, and then they'll speak good words to it, and then the other leaf, they'll go speak bad words to it, and like the leaf will start to be wilty, but it won't be as wilty as compared to the other leaf, which is completely wilted, dead, and dried. You know? It's just like these things matter. So why are you speaking the way that you are? Why are you saying the words that you do? And, like, what is the goal here when you communicate this? You know, look inside. Look in your intent. I'll be right with you in a second, Ray Rod. I'm just going to finish up my thoughts, and then we're going to let Rod on the line, and he's just going to talk our ear off when it comes to mortgages and taxes and insurance. I'm going to give him the floor hour and so here. So, you know what? We can finish this conversation on my end the other day. So what's important going forward is that, you know, being able to ask questions, being able to do that inner work, being able to be healthy in oneself is going to really further the external solutions and going to create real change. That it's not just going to be making sure everybody has food in their mouth. It's not just going to be making sure we have power in case, you know, they shut the power off. It's not just going to be making sure that, like, you know, we have enough trees so, like, you know, this these weird weather patterns that are happening are going to cease to exist. Looking on the inside, because the external solutions are great, but if you don't have that internal solution, all of that shit's just going to fall apart. It's all just going to completely fall apart, and you're going to be dealing with all these people that want to have solutions and they want to create solutions, but they're doing it from an ego-centered basis rather than putting the ego in check, looking outside of yourself and looking for, like, what's actually best. Like, what can I actually contribute here that's actually going to be good for me and everybody else? You know, it's like, I think once we start having those conversations and, like, you know, rather than, again, being subjective and, oh, well, I need to look out, like, not to say that you looking after you isn't a good thing. If you're sick or dead, there's nothing you can do to help anybody else when you're sick or dead. If you can't look after yourself, you can't look after other people. But what are you doing to yourself that's making you sick or dying that is going to bring a breakdown in the chain? You know, that it's like you need to really focus on yourself. And that's really, really hard because nobody wants to admit they're the problem. Myself included. It is so incredibly hard to look at yourself in the mirror and say to yourself, I'm the fuck up. But you know what? The first step to admitting, so the first step to solving a problem is admitting there is one. Okay, I'm going to take a quickie break here, and when we come back, we're going to let Rod pop in the line, and he can just fire away. So we'll be back in about 10 minutes here, guys.
Sometimes as a Christian, it can be really hard to continue to find joy in our daily disciplines, even in biblical word Bible study. Honestly, we know we're supposed to find joy in it and get growth. That's why I named my new show Dynamic Word Bible Studies, because studying the word shouldn't leave you unchanged. It should provide dynamic growth through your life and the power of God encountered every day. I'm really excited to start this on Wednesdays from 9 to 10:30 right here on Freedomizer Radio. We're going to start out with the book of Romans, one of the most important books to my early Christian walk. So whether you've been a Christian for a long time or you're just learning about Scripture, this is going to be a great place to learn what it was that Paul was trying to tell the Church of Romans and the things that are important to us still today. Again, join me every Wednesday from 9 to 10:30 right here on Freedomizer.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
I didn't know that there was beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like...
Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense, with the educated redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org. Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on freedomizerradio.com. Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve it, Coagula.
Solve it, Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Vibra prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
In center position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I gotcha.
I got you right where I want you. Like a raw line in the field, I stalked you. Creeped up on you, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on you. Once I get you, you'll be your goal.
Can you hear me now?
We just all part of the game.
In this thing we're solo now, it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow the world with Satan.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Alrighty, people, we are back. This is Sam, host of Open World from Against the Grain. We are going to invite Rod on the show because I just spent the last how long yakking y'all's ears off. Rod, you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yes.
How's it going?
Hello. Oh, well enough. Well enough. So we're looking at tax day on the 17th. Normally it's the 15th, but if the 15th falls on a Saturday, then it's the next Monday, except when there's a holiday in the District of Columbia, and then they get an extra day, and therefore the rest of us also get an extra day. So I'd like to talk about who pays the federal income tax and why, and on what.
Awesome.
All right. And specifically,
floor is yours, my friend.
All right. So when people talk about paying the federal income tax, they say, tax is, pay your tax is. Well, why is that? Is there more than one? Yes, there are. Well, they also have state income tax at the same time. Now, the states simply piggybacked off the federal tax so that the states made their own numbers. But as far as who pays and what income is and why and all that, they simply defer to whatever the federal one is. So we've got just one puzzle. Now, I said there are several income taxes. The first one, well, historically, the first one was in the Civil War, and then there was one in 1894, and then the next one was in 1913, and that's the one we still have. It was called the normal tax. And then in 1936, there are some more with the Social Security Act. Okay, so the normal tax, the name of the law was the Tariff of 1913. It's something like there is hereby imposed on the tax on the income of every individual a tax, and then they talk about the amount. And I think nowadays they have two of them, one for married and other than married. And that's an interesting question because are they talking about federally licensed marriage or state licensed marriage or unlicensed marriage or what, or all of them? That's an interesting question because what the state creates, they can tax. Okay. And that means that they could legislate marriage, they could tax marriage out of existence because the power to tax is the power to destroy, as someone on the Supreme Court of England said. Might have been learned at hand. Okay, So they could tax everyone's married income as at 150%. You got to pay more money than you. There was in England at one time an income tax of 102%. People were calling their bankers, begging them not to pay interest. Okay. So they could destroy marriage by simply taxing it out of existence. Would that be legal or not? If it was a federally licensed marriage, if you'd gotten married in the District of Columbia, for example, then you'd think they could do that. But the power to create is the power to tax, you would think. But they're talking about state licensed marriages. Is that close enough? So that's an interesting question that I haven't really looked into much. I don't even know how. Okay, so there is hereby imposed a tax on the income of every individual. So that gives us two questions. What is income and what is an individual? That was the first time the Congress ever used the word individual. I looked for it in the 18th century. I couldn't, in the 19th century, I couldn't find it. They talk about, once I think I found it, said natural person. Congress talked about natural person, which is the traditional name for human beings, or what do we call ourselves. So they invented this word individual. If there's no definition, how do they know what is one? Well, there was a case where someone said, oh, I don't have to pay this tax because I'm a natural freeborn and whatever individual. And the judge said, you say you're an individual, applies to all individuals, so the tax applies to you. No proof necessary. When we have a definition, how do we use it? How do we use a definition? I have a definition of a cat. A cat is a mammal that meows or something like that. So how do I use that definition? I have an object in front of me, and I want to know, is it a cat or not? So I look at the definition. Well, first it has to be a mammal. What is a mammal? Well, it makes milk, it bears live young, has fur. And the thing in front of me has scales, it lays eggs. Well, that's not a mammal, it's not a cat. So that's how you'd use a definition. You apply it to some facts. So you would think if you have a definition of individual, then you'd look at whoever the government's claiming is an individual and see if it fits or not. And there's no definition. There has been case law defining an individual as that which cannot be divided into parts without losing its identity. Well, that's everything. What is there that can be divided into parts without losing its identity? A bucket of water, maybe. Then it's no longer a bucket. Okay, so there was a case where a corporation wanted electric service. So they asked, and the other corporation selling electric service, maybe seeing them as a competitor or something, declined. They didn't want to sell them, so this corporation really wanted their electric service, and so they went to court and sued the electric company, said, you got to give me a service. And the judge said, well, the statute says that they shall sell electric service to every individual, and a corporation, like a natural person, is an individual. Now, the question before the court, it's important to know what the question was before you could understand a court ruling. The question was whether this corporation was an individual. There was never a natural person in that case where the question was whether was this the natural person individual or not. So that was just a comment. That's what they call dicta as opposed to holding. Holding is the answer to the question that was in front of the court. Dicta is everything else. It's just commentary. So that case was then later used to say, oh, yes, a natural person is an individual. How do we know that? Well, because this other case about a corporation said that a natural person is an individual. It said a corporation like a natural person is an individual. And that's close enough, which, of course, I don't think that's close enough. So the IRS does not figure out what an individual is. They just rely on other people's word for someone as an individual. So if someone fills out a 1040, well, it says here that in the tax that it's taxes imposed on every individual, and you signed a 1040, so that must be you. And the Social Security Act also says that every individual, there's two parts. There's the FICA tax where you pay in, and then there's the payout, depending on their disability and all that. When the Social Security Act was passed, there were multiple taxes imposed. So to be enacted by the Senate and U.S. House of Representatives in your General Congress assembled like that, that there is hereby imposed a tax of this percent of like 1%. There'll be little titles like old age insurance. There is hereby imposed a tax on the income of every individual of the amount of, you know, 0.1% or something for this. And then there's another title, disability insurance. There is hereby imposed a tax in this amount. The titles are not part of the law, and the order of sections is also not part of the law. The judges are not supposed to draw any inferences about what the law is from what order the sections are in. And when someone said, when someone went to court claiming that the income tax is unconstitutional, I think that was Halvering versus Davis. Halvering was the head of the IRS, and it wasn't that he sued the other guy. I think the other side guy sued him, but on appeal they switched the order of the names. Whoever's doing the appeal is now the first one. Okay, so because the Supreme Court said that the Social Security Act is constitutional, and the reason why it's constitutional is because the pay-in has nothing to do with the pay-out. And Congress, anticipating this, had kind of shuffled they arranged the order of the sections in a way that doesn't very little difference, although the order of the sections is not part of the law anyway. So there is supposed to be nothing, no connection between the pay-in and the pay-out. So the funds paid to Social Security go into the general fund and are treated just like any other income tax, and are not earmarked in any way. There's this mysterious Social Security trust fund. It's not the case that your taxes go into the trust fund. If there is a trust fund, and I've never seen that there is, it must be something that Congress votes money out of the general fund into this trust fund and then goes from there. I can't imagine how else it would work. So what you actually earn, the connection between the pay and the payout, which is supposed to not exist, is the credits. You get credit for working 1 year. It's four quarters. You work four quarters, and each quarter is a credit. So if you have 40 credits or more, then you get a payout, and then how much you get depends on how many credits you have. So there is where we have the word taxes, because there's the normal income tax, the normal tax. By the way, these things do not have names. When I said there is hereby imposed a tax, this for the old age and then for that, and which connection of the old age and whatever ours is through the title, which is not part of the law anyway. So these things are not given names. You just have to say the tax imposed on such and such date or such and such act of Congress. And I guess you'd have to talk about which line if you had to distinguish one from another. So there's the normal tax, and there's the Social Security tax, FICA tax, and there's the taxes. All right. The movie Freedom to Fascism lists 110 different types of taxes at the federal level alone. So I'm only talking about one category.
What's that movie called? Freedom to Fascism?
I'm sorry? Freedom to Fascism. Freedom to Fascism. It was Aaron somebody. It was about 20 years ago that movie came out.
Okay.
He interviewed a guy high up at the IRS. I think he was asking what law. He started with street interviews. He just asked people on the street, do we have to pay tax? Oh, yeah. What law is it that says you have to pay income tax? I don't know. Have you ever seen it? Oh, no. So then he went to the IRS and he asked the same question. When it worked his way up the chain, and he talked to a former, administrator, whoever the head is. And the guy spoke to him in Hebrew or Yiddish. And it was basically saying, fuck you. That was not, that's not very encouraging. It doesn't build confidence.
No.
So the,
no.
I'm sorry?
I say no, I would think not.
There's a lot that he could have said. There are a bunch of cases that say that, that people have to pay, that individuals have to pay these income taxes. And I don't want to give you the wrong impression because, okay, the Pete Hendrickson has studied this income tax very thoroughly, more than any, I think he's hit the nail on the head. A lot of people have studied it and got weird conclusions. And he says that it's a tax on basically growing fruit using government fertilizer. If you use the government fertilizer to grow your fruit, then you owe them a piece of the action. And so if you have taxable income, then you do owe the tax. There are two categories, what they call two great classes of taxes, and this was talked about in the 1895. So there was a, I said there was an income tax in the Civil War era, and there doesn't seem to have been any dispute about it. And in 1894, there was another one which was thrown out by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional in 1895. And the reason was because there was a tax on land, on the incomes, the rents from land. And they said, the Supreme Court said the tax on the land burdens the land as if it were a tax, direct tax. Sorry. The tax on the rents from land burdens the land in the same way as if it were a direct tax on the land. Now, in the Constitution, there are two kinds of taxes, direct and indirect, and there are rules about each one. Taxes must be apportioned among the states, and indirect taxes must be geographically uniform. The word is uniform, but case law says that means geographically uniform. So the federal government could, and I'm only talking about the federal government here, the federal government could, if they wished, have a tax on transporting persons by rail and another tax on transporting persons by bus, and those taxes could be different amounts. But if there's going to be a tax on rail, it has to be on the same amount in Alabama as it is in California. So it's geographically uniform. So excises, imposts, and duties, those are indirect taxes. Indirect taxes must be geographically uniform. Then direct taxes, which the Congress has used only once, and I looked that up, in the 1800s, mid-1800s, between the Civil War and this other thing. There was a table that said Alabama shall pay this much. It was alphabetical, whatever would be the next one, Connecticut or whatever will pay this much. And then it was up to the states to figure out how they're going to tax the counties and the citizens to collect all that. Indirect taxes must be geographically uniform, and direct taxes must be apportioned. And the tax of 1894 did not, on the rents of land, was not apportioned, and they said it was a direct tax because it burdens the land, and therefore they threw out that that income tax. And then there was some discussion in Congress. The Congressional Record used to be called the Congressional Globe. And in preparation for the Spanish-American War, a congressman said, well, what if we pass a new income tax, and then in the middle of a war, Congress throws that out as unconstitutional? What are we going to do? And I think the answer is they made a tax that looks like something other than what it is. And, you know, if it's not real, they can't throw it out as unconstitutional because nobody can complain about it. So in 1913, the tax on every individual, so tax on the income of every individual. So now the question is, what is income? If you write to the IRS under the Freedom of Information Act, Freedom of Information Act applies to every federal agency. That means the departments under the executive branch, under the president, there's an organizational hierarchy. And all of that is the executive branch. And you can write to any of them and say, under the Freedom of Information Act, I request this document or that document. They do not have to create documents. They don't have to do something called research. But they do have to give you a document if trying to find it. And if they don't, then Congress has authorized us to sue and force them to cough up the document. Remember that the Constitution creates a government of limited powers. So Congress has these enumerated powers. It's Congress shall have power to do this, this, and this. And the federal courts also have limited powers and limited jurisdiction. You can't just sue for anything that was good under common law. Congress has to say, this category of person can sue for that category of thing. So anyone who has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request, if it's denied, has standing to sue in federal court over this one issue. Okay. So Freedom of Information Act, the IRS webpage has a slot where you can fill in. You can just fill in the slot and hit a button, and that is your Freedom of Information Act request. So if you ask for the document that sets forth the definition of income, which has been done, the answer is the Freedom of Information Act does not require us to do research, perform research, or create documents. And then they also go on about, you're challenging the tax laws, and we don't like that, and all of that, all of which has nothing to do with the question. So that's interesting. They do not cough up a document that shows the definition of income. If you ask a CPA for the definition of income, they will show you the definition of gross income. And that's a first problem. If you've been to sixth grade, then you know the definition of gross income is not going to be the same as the definition of income because it's a different word, a different term. And it's worse because it says gross income means all income. And there's a few more clauses, from whatever source derived, without reference to any, that's not the right word, without any apportionment, nothing to do with apportionment. So those other clauses don't really, from whatever source derived, well, that doesn't, if it's all, then you can say from whatever, and that doesn't change it. It doesn't change the list of what is or what isn't. And the other clause also doesn't change. So basically what we have is gross income means all income. So if that were the definition of income, then it would be income means all income. And if you've been to sixth grade, you know that a circular definition is no good. So that is just being silly if they're trying to tell you what that section from the Internal Revenue Code is the definition of income. The Internal Revenue Code is Title 26 of the United States Code. Now Congress passes laws on whatever comes up. They have a debate. Somebody introduces legislation. They debate it. They go through a process. Eventually they pass it. And it can be on any subject. So during a given year, Congress could pass quite a number of laws on quite a number of different subjects. So how do you find all the tax laws? You have to go through every statute that the Acts of Congress is called a statute. They're published as statutes at large. You have to go through every single one to find all of them. People got tired of that. So Congress appointed a committee of lawyers through all of that and sort them out by subject matter and call that the United States Code. So Title I is about one subject. Titles are chapters. Chapter 26 or Title 26 is the Internal Revenue Code. And it's supposed to contain all the laws related to that that are general, all the general and permanent laws of the United States. That's what the United States Code is. So sometimes Congress likes that summary so much that they say, okay, we're going to pass this title into positive law. And that means if the committee got it wrong, if there's any discrepancy between this, what says in the title and the actual act of Congress, then we're going to take the title over what we did before. So nobody has to ever go back and look those up because we have the title that's been passed into positive law. And in the United States Code, page one, there's a list of the 50 titles, and there's a star or not by each one, a star if it's been passed into positive law. And Title 26 has not been passed into positive law, which means that if you don't believe that they got it right, then you have to go back and look at the actual enactment and find out and compare them. And the most authoritative, if you don't trust what's published in statutes at large, which you can find in any major major library, I've seen it in, or law libraries. So I've seen it in county law library, and I've also seen it at a university library, statutes at large. If you don't believe that statutes at large got it right, then you have to go to the slip law. You have to write to Congress and say, I want the slip law of this statute passed on that date. And that's the actual law. And Pete Hendrickson has compared the Title 26 with the underlying acts of Congress, and he said there are some discrepancies. And I'm not sure what those are. I'd say there are some discrepancies. If you look at the act of Congress of, there was the Internal Revenue Code was reenacted in 1939, 1954, 1986. And if you look at each of those, you will find it says, be it enacted by the House of Representatives and the Senate in General Congress assembled. And normally they will say something like that we're allocating so much money for a bridge or something. We're enacting, you know, that murder is prohibited of, they can't prohibit murder generally because that's a common law crime for the states, but they can prohibit murder in federal facilities or murder of federal officers, whatever. Be it enacted by blah, blah. And what they say is, in this case, that the following may be cited as the Internal Revenue Code of such and such year. And then it starts and there's the whole Internal Revenue Code. Well, that's interesting. So the actual law that was passed in 1939, 1954, 1986 is that a certain bunch of words may be called by a certain name. So that's not where they passed the actual variations of the code, when they change it from one year to the next. So there must be, in between there must be the actual laws that, because what they're doing is they're changing the summary to be even more different from the thing that it summarizes. But if we can rely on the Internal Revenue Code to mean what it says, then, again, we have that formula. There is hereby imposed a tax on the income of every, and sometimes it says married individual or not married individual, a tax in the certain amount. Okay. If it's an excise, there's a fellow who's compared, I just found this brochure once. I don't remember who it was, but this fellow compared the income tax with other excises. And the other excises form like a tax on selling, I think on selling firearms would be an excise, or tax on importing goods. There should be no tax on exports, but there should be tax on imports. Or a tax on transporting persons by rail would be an excise. It says there is hereby imposed a tax on, blah, blah. This tax shall be paid by, blah, blah. And it follows the same formula for all the excises. And then here's this other excise. According to the Supreme Court, it's an excise. It doesn't follow the formula. The Supreme Court said that the income tax is an excise in the case of Bruchhaber versus Union Pacific Railroad. A stockholder, the railroad was going to pay the tax. And a stockholder says, oh, no, if you do that, it will diminish the value of the company, and it will diminish the value of my share. Therefore, I have standing to say, and I don't think that the tax is legal, so I have standing to go to court and say, don't do that. So he did. He sued to enjoin the company from paying the tax, and saying that it wasn't legal. And then the court had to deal with it, and it went up to the Supreme Court. And the question was the... was the tax, a direct tax or an excise? And the answer was, it's an excise. And it's one of the most long-winded sentences that there is. Chief Justice White liked to write in a very long-winded way. The conclusion reached in the Pollock case that recognized the fact that taxation on income was in its nature an excise, entitled to be enforced as such, unless, and the unless had to do with this bit about burdening land. So in response to this 1895 case, that was Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust, Congress, or who was it? Yeah, Congress. Under Article 5, I think, of the Constitution, there are two ways to amend the Constitution. One of them is that Congress proposes amendments, which are then sent out to the states, and the states have to ratify using by a margin of two-thirds majority of three-quarters of the state. Two-thirds of majority of both houses of the legislature of three-quarters of the states. And it doesn't say whether the governors need to sign, but when there's two-thirds of both houses behind something politically, the governor likes to get in front of the parade and sign it. That's not an issue. Except there's one legislature that has only one house. Anyway. So that's a high standard. It has to be a very popular thing in order to get a constitutional amendment. So Congress proposed the 16th Amendment to get around the Supreme Court's action. And it says I don't have it in front of me, the Congress shall have power to tax incomes regardless of any apportionment. So they were saying regardless of the rule in the Pollock case. And so in the Bruchhaber case, they had to deal with this same question again. Did the 16th Amendment change what the precedent established in the Pollock case? So they said entitled to be enforced and such unless and until it was concluded that to enforce it would amount to accomplishing the result which the requirement as the portion of direct taxation was adopted to prevent, in which case the duty would arise to disregard form and consider substance alone and had subject the tax to the regulation as to apportionment, which otherwise as an excise would not apply to it. Said the whole purpose of the amendment, the 16th Amendment, was to relieve all income taxes when imposed from apportionment for a consideration of the source whence the income was derived. So the source was the land, the rents from the land. I said the source was the land. So the whole purpose of the 16th Amendment was to relieve all income taxes from apportionment, from the consideration of the source from which the income was derived. So in other words, Supreme Court is no longer supposed to, or any court is no longer supposed to say, the tax burdens the land, therefore it's a direct tax. And it doesn't have to be apportioned. The amendment was drawn for the purpose of doing away for the future with the principle upon which the Pollock case was decided, that is, of determining whether a tax on income was direct, not by a consideration of the burden placed on the tax income upon which it directly operated, but by taking into view the burden which resulted on the property from which the direct income was derived. So hopefully all that is fairly clear. Now that I've talked about it a bunch. So that's, and the different, so the purpose of the 16th Amendment was to allow income taxation without getting hung up on the rule that the rent on land burdens the land and therefore it's a direct tax, which must be apportioned. You find all kinds of simplified versions of what the 16th Amendment was, like, the 16th Amendment authorizes income tax. Well, no. There is already authorized income tax from Article 1, where it says Congress shall have power to impose taxes. And then they say, the 16th Amendment was to authorize a direct tax without apportionment. No, that's not what the Chief Justice is saying here. And I think it's on the issue of whether the tax is direct or indirect, but although the Supreme Court has decided it, some of the lower courts have still dealt with it from time to time. Congress could have not created any federal courts at all. Consistently with the Constitution, they could have just let the states handle all the litigation, and then if there's a federal issue, you could appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Those are the courts that exist according to the Constitution. Congress chose to create, using its delegated powers, the district courts, United States district courts. Those are the federal trial courts, and there's one, two, or possibly three of them for every state. There's a northern district or southern district. Remember? And then the courts of appeals are the circuit courts, and there's 10 of those, plus there's one for District of Columbia, probably Guam, and so forth, together in one circuit. And so anything appealed from any of those district courts goes to the circuit court. As a practical matter, that is the end of the line. You can appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but they only take about 1% of the cases. So that the odds are that the Court of Appeals is the end of the line. Erwin Schiff said, the Constitution does not mean what the Constitution says. The Constitution does not mean what the Supreme Court says the Constitution says. Instead, the Supreme Court means what the courts of appeal say the Supreme Court says the Constitution says. And he was talking about this one issue, whether the tax is direct or indirect, because some of the circuits have quoted the U.S. Supreme Court correctly, and some of them quoted where the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice who wrote the opinion, they quote the positions of the opposing parties. They say, this party says this, the plaintiff says this, and the defendant says this, and finally, well, we say this. And what they did was they quoted some of these courts of appeals quoted where the Chief Justice had quoted the litigant, and then he said, no, this is wrong. But they messed it up, whether in good faith or not, and they just took the part where a quotation and said, okay, this is what the Supreme Court said, even never mind that they said that was wrong. So that's why there's a circuit split on this issue that the Supreme Court has already decided in the Bruchhaber case that it's an excise. Right, so if something is an excise, there's two things that flow from that. One of them sort of in the past and one in the future. So one of them is this requirement from the Constitution, and the other is the question, well, what is an excise? Is it, you know, legitimately an excise? Because an excise is a tax on the exercise of a government-granted privilege, and that one is difficult to nail down. I don't have a case that says so in so many words, what is the definition of excise? So that is the weakest link of what I'm saying, but it is true that an excise is that kind of a thing. So, if you look at the examples of excises, it's always that. All right, if you got your money by exercising a government-granted privilege, then an excise can be applied to that, and then you do owe the tax if you're an individual, which is another question. It's interesting that the Social Security Act says that and talks about an individual, and it doesn't talk about Social Security numbers. The executive branch just came up with that as a method of keeping track of everything with everybody. It is clear that the Social Security Act is all about individuals, and so if you sign up for a Social Security number, then you must be an individual because you said so, because you did something only an individual can do. So you've created evidence. It's not that it does something, but you've created evidence that it's individual. There was a fellow named Bob Wengrid who wrote a book titled Martial Law Rule and a couple of other books looking into this. His father had been convicted of some income tax situation, because he was an insurance salesman, and he said, oh, well, this is not income. And he said, this is not the thing that is taxed because the tax law has a dollar sign on it. And if you look at these green pieces of paper that I got, they don't have a dollar sign on it. So how is that connected? This is not what you're taxing. Which is an interesting argument. And there's also an issue of the single bar versus double bar. In the early days, they used single bar, and nowadays they use a double bar, and it's not the same thing. And I looked at the Congressional Globe, that's the Congressional Record in the early days, and I looked at statutes at large, and each of them had a changeover. There was a period when there was a last time they used the single bar, and there was a first time they used the double bar, and there was an overlap. So there was a period of time when one of those sources was using the single bar at the same time the other one was using the double bar. And because of that, it looks like it's just a typographical thing. There was not a moment when they said, okay, let's change over. All right. So Bob Wengren, he said he got the transcripts and he read them trying to figure out what the hell happened. And he noticed that whenever his father said, oh, I'm not a person, or I question whether I'm a person, because that's a huge issue, what is a person? Defined as an individual corporation, partnership, estate, or trust. We have this problem with individual, but a corporation, okay, is a person, partnership, estate, or trust. Those are all business entities. Does that mean this individual is a business entity too? Because again, we saw a case where the telephone, whatever company it was that wanted electric service, that corporation is an individual. Which, by the way, means that corporations ought to be paying the U.S. individual income tax, as I said, it's imposed on any individual. So they ought to be paying that on top of the corporate income tax if that's what an individual is. Or if we can believe what we read, that a corporation is an individual. Bob Wengren's father, he said, I don't think I'm a person. And he said, I haven't read the transcripts myself, but he said that every time he did that, the prosecutor would read the man's Social Security number into the record. So Bob said, that's the key. And he jiggered up a way, or maybe somebody else did. I called him up on the phone. I asked him who came up with this rescinding, and he didn't answer the question. He just said, well, you can't be a little bit pregnant. So he has a way of rescinding, as you can rescind a contract. If it's procured under fraud, you say this, you know, I discovered the fraud and contract is no good, but you have to give notice of that. You can't just keep going along with it until later on you say, oh, by the way. And he says that, well, a statute thing like Social Security is not a contract, but it's enforced as if it were a contract. Okay. So, individual. I'm not sure where I was. I went to individual. Do you know where I was? Do you have any clue?
You were just talking about like contracts and like
right.
How do I put it in Rod's words? The whole what I'm getting out of it is like legislation is different and. I don't know how to put it. You speak so eloquently that it's just like, oh, this is hard. So I'd say just pick a spot and keep going.
All right. Yeah, I was talking generally about who has to pay and why. So an excise is if you're receiving Social Security payments, comes directly out of the treasury. Well, there's no question that's income. I would be very puzzled to try to figure out how that wasn't income. Of course, I just said there's no definition of income. There has been a definition of income at the case of Smietanka. Smietanka versus, S-M-I-E-T-A-N-K-A. Supreme Court case there. There's only one of them. It said that they were talking about the Corporation Tax Act of 1909. It said that the tax in some whatever case that there was a different tax that they were considering, but it said it seems to us that obvious that the clear that the word income must be given the same meaning for this tax that we're considering at the moment as it was in the Corporation Tax Act of 1909, and that what that meaning is has been by now definitely settled by decisions of this court. They didn't quite exactly say which decisions, but during that entire opinion, they quote a bunch of other decisions, so that must be the ones they're talking about. Larry Beecraft, an attorney, wrote a brief titled Legal Briefs Define Income. And Pete Hendrickson says he doesn't think that Larry Beecraft understands what income is, but that's okay, because you don't start, if you're doing a research like that, you don't start with an understanding. You start with the source from which you're going to get an understanding. So there might be, for example, a railroad company using a railroad on federal land, because the federal government granted to the railroads the checkerboard of land on the, isn't it, to help them build their railroads, because they couldn't afford to buy the land. So for 1 mile, they'd have the width of the track plus a mile on the right, and for the next mile, they'd have the width of the track plus a mile on the left, and there would be, you can actually see in the map someplace where the towns would build in the remaining land to be close to the railroad without building on the railroad's land. And so you can actually see the footprint of this railroads got their land from the federal government by grant. And so it's legitimate for the federal government to tax the railroads. Tax the railroad companies for use of that land. So that sort of thing would be an excise. All right. So those Social Security payments would be income, taxable, would be subject to an excise. They would be subject to an excise. And so what the meaning is definitely been settled by decisions of this court. That's Miyatonka. So one of those decisions would have been probably that someone had to pay taxes on Social Security payments. Or if you're selling firearms, if you're selling machine guns under a federal firearms license, and I'm not sure how the federal government has power to issue licenses to sell firearms, that it would have to be an illegal thing to do before they could do that. I saw a state law from 1880 something around there. First they said it shall be unlawful to possess opium. No, it shall be unlawful to give or sell opium to any person of lawful age. And that caught my attention because it does not say it shall be unlawful for any person to sell, give or sell opium to any person of lawful age. Maybe they just omitted that. Normally they say it's unlawful for a person to do this or that. The word person is in there, but not in the right place. And then the next year, they said, there is hereby established a licensing program for selling opium. So first you make it illegal, and then they can license it, as long as there was some basis for making it illegal in the first place. I would like to know how possession of things, you think it began with burglar tools? Possession of something that's inherently dangerous, like dynamite, those are treated differently. And wild animals are different from domesticated animals. If you have a dog that's considered a domesticated animal and it gets loose and hurts someone, well, that's your fault. If you have a tiger that those are wild. Well, if you capture a tiger and then it gets loose again and hurts someone, that's not your fault because it's a wild animal in the first place. And bees are also considered these wild animals. And that goes back to ancient Rome. Okay. So there's a distinction between things that are inherently dangerous and not. By the way, automobiles have never been found to be inherently dangerous. We imagine that the foundation of automobile licensing is, oh, these are dangerous objects, you could hurt somebody, so of course they have to regulate them. Well, no, they're not categorized that way with the law. The foundation of automobile licensing or motor vehicle licensing is that it's unlawful to use public property for private gain. The public property in question is the roads, the highways. And if you're going to be doing business on the roads, if you're going to be hauling freight for hire, carrying fare-paying passengers, or being employed as a driver, as in the movie Driving Miss Daisy, it's a job, it's an occupation, you get hired, that's a driver. Needs a license for that. In the same way, if a restaurant wants to set up its tables and chairs outside, if they want to use it, they need a license for that. If you want to sell things, sell jewelry or something on the sidewalk, you need a license for that. I saw a fellow once who was sitting cross-legged on the sidewalk, and he had his big scarf out with a bunch of jewelry items, but there were no price tags. So if Officer Friendly came along, he wouldn't see any violation of the law. But people could offer, oh, I'd like to buy that thing. Oh. But they weren't for sale. Anyway, so inherently dangerous objects. Are firearms considered inherently dangerous objects? That would be a reason for prohibiting and licensing their use. But we have the Second Amendment, so at the federal level that's a problem. So I don't know what the foundations of that are. How did I get to firearms? Selling things under a license, that would be, once you got the license and once you're doing something under license, it's pretty clear that the money you get from that would be taxable as an excise because you're doing it by permission of the federal government. So there's two examples of taxable income that someone could have, Social Security and selling things under a license. So if you don't have, a third example is working for the federal government, being employed as an employee for an employer who is the federal government. If you look at the Internal Revenue Code under employment, about employment, it defines employer, defines employee, defines employment, but it's all kind of circular. An employer is someone who works for, you know, employment is what you do for an employer, and an employer is somebody who employs somebody in employment for, on the phrase employs someone in employment. They had to work the word employment in there because the definition of employment mattered. And this all goes back to, it says it includes working for the federal government. And there's a huge ambiguity when they use the word includes. What else does it include? Does it include anything else? Sometimes they say needs, which is clear. You know, a cat means a mammal that meows. If I say a cat includes a mammal that meows, well, does that include, also include dogs or, you know, tigers? Includes. So if you read very carefully, as Pete Hendrickson has done, and some others, you see that the whole employment thing refers very clearly to federal. Very unclear whether it applies to anything else, depending on what this includes means. But it's a fairly, the fact that they had to resort to this employed and in employment indicates they're trying to pull a fast one there. So wages are pay that you get for being employed in employment for an employer. So wages, clearly if you're working for the federal government, you've got wages. And people have gone to court saying, my wages are not income. and the judge with definitions, they will assume you're talking about the definitions that are in the Internal Revenue Code rather than your own definition, unless you say so. I'm going to be using my definitions, not yours, and here they are. And they say, oh, wages are income. You admit you have wages. And the judge has his own idea what that means, whatever so the Internal Revenue Code says, and it's very clearly the tax is imposed on wages. But it's clearly a different thing from saying, well, the money that I was paid are not wages. Because wages is defined, and then what I was paid is not. It's very dangerous to say anything because these guys control the rule book for definitions. So you could say, well, I only speak kindergarten. I don't speak legalese. I only speak kindergartenese. So let's talk at the level of kindergartener.
This is the part that I need. I'm pretty good at legalese. When we start speaking kindergartner, you're on my level, bud. Continue.
Yeah. There was a fellow I talked to, and I lost track of who it was. He starts by saying, okay, here's my glossary. And the judge said, oh, we're not going to be using that. Well, I'm going to be using that, so I guess we can't talk to each other. He has his. So that's a good start. And the other thing is just be careful not to use any law, any words that are defined in statutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to use. All right. So wages and all that, that means money. If you work for a private company, I got to say, okay, so the 1895 tax was 2% on income over 4,000, which was equivalent to about 105,000 in today's buying power. So these were small taxes on March 1st, 1913, the first income tax form 1040, which we just numbered them in sequence, was made available. The first tax law was tacked onto other legislation and was enacted on October 3rd. 1913, retroactive to March 1st, 1913. There's a constitution says there shall be no ex post facto laws. There's no act today prohibiting something you did yesterday, but that refers to criminal law. There's a case law on this that says it refers to criminal law only. They cannot make it illegal today. They cannot make it a crime today, something you did last week, and then punish you for that. That's been ex post facto law. But they said it's okay to do that with tax laws. They can make them retroactive. And I've seen a more recent example of that. So the point is that the tax was not really heavy at first, and then they just crank it up and crank it up and crank it up. So people didn't have a good reason to question all this right away. Most people didn't affect at all. And then the ones that did, they had plenty of money to donate or whatever. And 1913, we were getting ready for World War I. It would be unpatriotic to question that. And the withholding of everybody's money who works for private corporations or other people, that began in preparation for World War II or in World War II. Well, we got to be patriotic. We got to have plenty of money to prosecute this war against the Nazis and the Japs. So they're all fascists. So nobody really questioned it. That was when they got they convinced everyone that they were employers who employed employees in employment. And so they got the W-2 program was started. So now if you work for virtually anybody, you'll get a W-2 that says, oh, we paid you this much income because you made this much wages, and so we're withholding this much tax, and if you don't like that, you've got to file 1040 to get it back. Which, if it was not income, and if it was not wages, and if it was not taxable, it's illegal to do that. And I identified once which law it was that they're breaking when they do that. Of course, nobody wants to accuse their payroll office of breaking the law, because then that's not good for company advancement. Not good for your future as an employee or worker or whatever it is you are of this company. I talked about federally granted privilege governed by the privileges, and it's unclear whether state granted privileges are also federally taxable. It's unclear to me. I think I've seen arguments both ways. Anything that a corporation does is at the permission of the state government. The corporation, if you want a corporation, if you want to make a corporation, then you go to your Secretary of State and fill out some papers and pay a fee, and they say, okay, now you've got a corporation. And by permission of the legislature, that's it. And everything the corporation does is done by permission of the legislature. So everything the corporation does is taxable. At least by the state. Thing that you get when you get a corporation. If you look at advice for business people, if you want to go into business, should I be a sole proprietor? Should I have a partnership? Should I have an S-corp? Should I have a regular corporation? Should I have an LLC? And each one has its advantages and disadvantages. With a corporation, you can keep separate the liability of what the corporation does from your own personal liability. If you act as a sole proprietor, then you are legally identical with the business, and you're responsible for everything that you do, and you're responsible for everything the business does. And if you screw up, then you got to pay out of your own personal funds. If you have a corporation, then the corporation could do certain things, and as long as there are certain rules are followed about the corporation does things that are distinctly to the corporation, not you. If the corporation screws up, then the corporation has to pay for it. But you're out of your own personal pocket, you're not. Corporation's assets can be used up for that, and the corporation can declare bankruptcy and get relief from its creditors. The purpose of bankruptcy is to stop state court action. If you screw up and someone sues you and you say, I'm totally out of money, I need to reorganize. You go to the federal government, you say, I'm filing bankruptcy. And that stops the state court action, somebody suing you. That stops that, and it all has to be administered through the bankruptcy trustee. So a corporation can go bankrupt without you going bankrupt is the point. Your assets, which are not, you can own company stock, but your assets are not attachable to what the corporation does. So under common law, you cannot limit your liability like that. So and I'm talking about English common law. I found a thing once that said the common law of England as it existed at the time of the Revolution forms a part of the law of this state. So common law, that's what we're talking about. Under common law, you cannot limit your liability. So a sole proprietorship is a common law way of doing business, whereas a corporation is not. Corporations exist only because the state exists. So corporation has workers and pays them and sends out W-2s saying, we're an employer and we employ these employees in employment, so we're paying the wages and so we're withholding. And then they sign a W-2, which I don't think these are actually signed. A thing like that ought to be sworn. How is the government... There was a Polish writer about war named Clausewitz who said that war is the currency in which the checks of diplomacy must ultimately be cashed. You know, if you've got an army, then you've got a much better diplomatic situation for negotiating than if you don't. And that's a general principle of negotiation. If you can do something and the other side knows it, or at least believes it, then you've got more leverage. Another principle of negotiation is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement, or BATNA, which is if I walk away from this deal, what have I got? Whereas if the other party walks away from this deal, what have they got? And someone who can actually get a really good deal if the party they're dealing with has no alternative, no good alternative. It's called having someone over a barrel. So, that was it. Currency checks, okay. So the war, the currency in which it must be paid, and the negotiations, or anything else, you do business with the idea in the back of your mind, this might go to court, and what would it look, what would happen in court? And so the court doesn't we're not in court all the time, but we're thinking about it all the time when doing business. So when I would think that a W-2 would be sworn because that evidence admissible in court, you know, all this business of sending out forms and sending things to the federal government, you would think that that's all done with an eye towards what would it look like if it went to court. So they ought to be sworn, but they're not. So that's odd. Okay. The W-2 that you receive is not sworn, but the statement filed by the corporation, that would be the payroll manager or whatever, with the IRS, that one would be sworn. Okay, so that's admissible in court. Okay, so they swear to the federal government that they paid you and wages and all that. And that's going to, if it went to court, that would win. If one side swears to something, the other side is silent. So you have the option to file a Form 1040. The law says a return or statement, and I haven't seen a lot of exploration of what is a statement. Let's file a statement instead of a Form 1040. There was a case where a prosecutor said to the judge in response to a question, you know, what does it have to be a 1040? What if it's something else? And the prosecutor said, well, it could be written on toilet paper as long as it has, you know, the identification of who from or who the taxpayer is, and taxpayers, it's got a definition on it. So who's making it and you know, the fact that it's supposed to be a return and the amounts, you know, all that. As long as it has certain things in it, then that's good enough. And so I certainly agree with what he was saying, because the law says return or statement. And even the word return means report. Some people say, oh, you're returning to the federal government money that you got from them. Well, that may be true, but that's not what a return is. There are other examples of the word return. A sheriff's deputy, when they serve a lawsuit and then make a report back, they make a return. That's called a return. So it just means a report. So you have the opportunity to file a 1040 or a return or a statement. And you can either attach a copy. The form itself has a signature line, a jurat, above the signature line that says, I swear that this form and all attachments are true. So if you attach anything, you're swearing that that's true. And again, that's evidence that can be used in court. So if you think that what the corporation, the company did is correct, then you attach the W-2 or 1099. If it's not employment, if it's a contract, then they don't do withholding, they give you 1099. You attach that and mail it off, and there you go. If you think it is not correct, you say, well, the amount of income that I received from this is actually zero because, you know, what they paid me didn't fit the definition of income, which is found in the Supreme Court in Smiatonka, sort of.
I'm still here.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I thought you asked if I'm still there. Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Just warning you, though, we got about 5 minutes left, so
said,
you got to...
Well, I'm about to wrap up. Okay, I'm ready to wrap up. So instead of doing that, you can attach a Form 4852, which is a substitute for W-2 or 1099. And so you copy the information like the EIN, but you put the amount zero if you didn't exercise any government granted privilege to get the money. And then your amount of income, presumably on the main slot, would be zero also. You attach that and you send it off. And so Pete Hendrickson, I think, pioneered the use of that, and they encountered a lot of agency resistance. But by now they've got upwards of 200,000 people having done this, and the IRS has sort of gotten used to it. LostHorizons.com And if you want to amend your return, if you filed a return for the year 2019, or if you didn't file but received a W-2 or 1099 and there's money withheld and you want that back, and if you didn't exercise any government granted privileges in earning that money, then you would file by April 15th, that's tomorrow, Saturday, a 1040X amended return with zeros and with a Form 4852. So check with Lost Horizons or call Sam if you want to do that. So if not, the deadline for an amended return is 3 years from the date that it was due. So this year we get until the 17th for current returns, but if you want to file an amended return for 3 years ago, that would be 209, the year 2019, that would be due tomorrow, April 15th. This month. Yay. I think I covered everything I wanted to say.
We've got 3 minutes to spare. Well, that's just, there's a lot to think and take in. I'm going to have to listen to this again, just like last week. So I'm going to have to sit down and actually going to listen, because kindergarten years, these, man, I usually speak in like layman's terms because that's how my brain, that's how my brain thinks. But this is always an information overload that is just super amazing.
Yes,
I want to thank you for coming on the show again and sharing your knowledge and sharing your research. This is always good whenever you're popping on. So, any last words?
And anybody who wants to, again, the deadline for 2019 will be tomorrow. Contact Sam, and if you can't figure it out from the website losthorizons.com, or Pete Hendrickson gets a lot of email. He's kind of busy.
Sounds good.
Sam will get in touch with me, and we'll figure it out.
Sounds good. I'll have to post a link so everybody can get that right from the chat thingy, the show description. So, alrighty. I think I'm going to pop off for the evening, and you have yourself a wonderful evening, and thank you everybody for popping in and listening today. It's another good one.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, have a wonderful evening.